for individuals interested in the medical field. Welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast, where doctors from around the world discuss groundbreaking work in the medical industry. Because in an ever-changing world, healthcare is constant.
Welcome back to the Doc Talk Podcast. My name is Tanishka Khanduja, and I'll be your host for today's special episode. I hope all my listeners are healthy and safe during these trying times. This podcast aims to spread awareness about healthcare topics, especially during times like these when healthcare is of paramount importance. And I'm proud to announce the guest speaker for this episode, Dr. Ryan D'Souza. Dr. Ryan D'Souza is a practicing ophthalmologist registered with the Medical Council of India and Maharashtra Medical Council with over 21 years of experience in cataract and refractive surgery. Dr. Ryan D'Souza presently runs the CEDS Eye Hospital in Bandra and is also attached as an honorary consultant to the prestigious Lilavati Hospital and Medical Research Center in Mumbai. His primary areas of interest are in cataract and refractive surgery. Dr. Ryan D'Souza has been involved as a US FDA investigator in the clinical trials for the Restore Multifocal IOL implant in 2006. He is also actively involved in academics, has delivered several speeches and lectures, and has been involved in different academic boards and domestic and international platforms. He also has a keen interest in medical retina and has completed a short retina fellowship from the Arvind Group of Eye Hospitals, Mumbai. Dr. Ryan D'Souza is presently affiliated with prestigious organizations like the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons, American Academy of Ophthalmology, European Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons, among others. It is an honor to have you on board, Doctor. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a part of this podcast.
It's a pleasure, Tanushka, to be with you, and thank you for having me on your podcast.
Doctor, before I proceed with questions that many of our listeners have asked, I'm sure you get this very often, but what are the different ways you can keep your eyes healthy? Many people have different approaches to this answer, but I would love to hear yours, Doctor.
So that's a very broad question, Tanushka. The eyes, the natural system of the eye is good enough to keep one's eye healthy on a normal day-to-day basis. So what do you mean by healthy? So if you're talking in modern times, basically we're talking about most people in the last couple of years, the increased screen time. So that's one question I get asked a lot. If you're referring to eye health vis-a-vis increased exposure to screens,
Is that what you're asking? In terms of vision and also blood supply, I think that's also a really important,
Okay, factors. So the good news here is, Tanishka, our bodies, nature has provided us with a fantastic system, intrinsic system, mm-hmm. that takes care of our eyes for us. So we don't have to do anything specific as far as eye health is concerned. Okay. However, having the most important things that I would recommend is a good nutrition, a good diet.
Okay.
minimizing your screen time, or rather optimizing your screen time. And the most important thing is get regular eye checks done once a year.
Okay.
So I think these would be general for health across any organ in your body or any other system of medicine, but mm-hmm. more specifically with the eye.
Okay. So what would you say are like the common misconceptions people have about vision or eye surgery that you've come across?
Misconceptions. So, well, let me think about this. This is a good question. There are no real misconceptions. See, most people, when you talk about eyes, when you talk about eye health, most people are aware of mainly two things. One is your number. So mm-hmm. they're concerned about, do I have a number? Do I need to wear glasses? And basically concerns related to this. And the second is the most other common ailment that most people have heard of is cataract.
Yeah.
But what's very important for your viewers, for your listeners out there to understand is there's a lot more to eye health and eye disease than just the number and cataract. So keeping your eye healthy includes being aware of all the different kind of problems that can affect your eye on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. and making sure that you have these examined at regular intervals to make sure that none of these problems are actually affecting your eyes. A lot of these problems are silent problems, so they don't really manifest themselves till it's quite late.
Understood.
So I keep educating people that knowing more about eye health and knowing more about the different kind of diseases that can affect your eye, and making sure you have it checked regularly. This is extremely important.
Yeah. So I think my follow-up question to what you just said was, what are the most common eye conditions you've come across during your years as an ophthalmologist?
That's a very good question. So that's the most important eye condition is what we refer to as a refractive error, what most people know as a number. So I think this affects the entire population, ranging from youngsters, teenagers, elders. So this is by and far the most common eye problem, having a refractive error or having a number. And this requires a careful examination by an optometrist or an ophthalmologist to determine the kind of number and then determine the kind of treatment required, whether it be glasses or contact lenses or surgery. Now, what's important here to understand is the earlier a number is detected in childhood, okay, the better it is for the child. I'm talking about childhood refractive errors here. The earlier a number is detected, because very often, either out of fear or social stigma or misconceptions or just simple lack of awareness, most parents hesitate in taking their children to an eye specialist, okay, because they're afraid that if the child has a number, the child will have to wear glasses. But what happens is, if this number is not detected at the right time, the child could end up having poor vision for life, which could remain, which may be refractory to treatment. So what happens here is you could end up with something known as amblyopia or a lazy eye. And when the child presents with it in later life, very often it's very difficult to reverse. So one of my most commonly given advice to most parents is make sure that you've taken your children for regular eye examinations, and make sure that if they have glasses, discuss it with the doctor. Do not be frightened. It is certainly not a social stigma. Wear your glasses regularly. You can save yourself and your child a lot of problem in later life. So the most common problem that I see in practice, and that most of my colleagues see in ophthalmological practice, is a refractive error, followed by cataract. Cataract is something that almost everybody has heard about and probably even fear. Okay, cataract is nothing but an aging change. The other common problems that are affecting us socioeconomically are diabetic retinopathy, because today in India we have a very large population of diabetics. So diabetic blindness is becoming a real challenge to all of us. Yeah. There are other problems like glaucoma, macular degeneration, and then of course a whole range of other problems. So if you were to ask me the five most common problems, I would say refractive error, cataract, glaucoma, macular degeneration, diabetic eye disease. And of course, let's not forget one more thing, and that's dry eyes. Today, with increased screen time, almost everybody spending hours and hours and hours in front of screens, dry eyes is also a very, very important topic to understand.
Yes, definitely. So a way to counter, I would say, or treat refractive errors is LASIK surgery. So at what age would you recommend getting it, if necessary? And should people consider getting it more often? What would you suggest?
Okay, so firstly, refractive errors can be countered by one of three ways. The two most common are spectacle lenses and contact lenses. Okay. But you need to understand that these are temporary reversible. So as long as you're wearing optical aids like spectacle glasses or contact lenses, you're seeing well. The moment you remove them, you are not able to see very well. So a permanent way to get rid of your refractive error is LASIK, or rather refractive surgery. So today, LASIK is only one component of refractive surgery. There are so many different options that are available, but let's talk about LASIK because that's the most common. So to answer your first question, we normally recommend LASIK only after the age of 18, preferably 20. But there are various other criteria to be followed. The person should have had a stable refractive error for the last 6 months to a year, which means the refractive error should have not changed too often in the last 6 months to a year. And there are other criteria that we also study before we advise or we recommend LASIK to a patient.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. That was really helpful, doctor. You mentioned this before, but glaucoma is like the leading cause of blindness in the US. Could you like shed more light about this eye condition and what exactly?
Certainly. So glaucoma, first and foremost, it's important to understand glaucoma is not a single disease. Glaucoma is a spectrum of disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so primarily what glaucoma is a condition wherein increased fluid pressure inside the eyeball damages the optic nerve responsible for vision over a period of time. Okay, that's the simplest way I can explain what glaucoma is. So I repeat this again. Increased eye pressure, which is the pressure of the fluid in the eyeball, which if left untreated for a prolonged period of time, eventually damages the optic nerve. Now, most people are under this misconception that glaucoma is a disease of eye pressure. It's not so. Eye pressure is only one of the identifiable and modifiable risk factors in glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
Glaucoma is primarily a disease of the optic nerve. It is a specific kind of optic nerve damage. And eye pressure is thought to be one of the risk factors associated with this optic nerve damage. Now, this optic nerve damage is irreversible, which means once glaucoma affects the eye and has progressed, it is not treatable or reversible, and the person has to live with decreased vision, impaired vision, or blindness for the rest of their life. So that means detecting glaucoma is very, very important in the early stages. Now, glaucoma is also known as the silent thief of sight, because there are no symptoms. There are no headaches. There's no pain in the eye. There's no redness in the common forms of glaucoma. So that's the reason why we educate people, even if you have no complaints after the age of 40, have your eyes checked regularly once a year, because silent, potentially blinding conditions like glaucoma can be picked up. And if they're picked up early enough, they can be managed very, very, very well. So like I mentioned a minute ago, glaucoma is not a single disease entity. There's a whole spectrum. So on one end of the spectrum, you have just high eye pressure, just high fluid pressure. And that's known as ocular hypertension. On the other end of the spectrum, you have optic nerve damage with normal to low pressure. And that's known as low pressure glaucoma, low tension glaucoma, normal tension glaucoma. And right in the center, you have something known as classic glaucoma, which is basically high pressure associated with optic nerve damage.
Okay. So I think I mentioned this earlier, but I'm actually a neuroscience major. And a very interesting fact in like a theory in neuroscience is neuroplasticity and how the brain is plastic in nature, essentially. And I think that makes a lot, like it's very helpful in when you're using a retinal implant. So it's something that I'm studying about as we speak. So could you shed light about how a retinal implant works?
What are you referring to when you're talking about retinal implant? Retinal implants are still in very, very, very preliminary stages of research.
Mm-hmm.
There is not enough information available about this. So when you're talking about retinal implant, what exactly are you referring to?
When there's optic nerve damage or there's some damage to the retina, retinal implant will directly transfer the messages to the optic nerve. We have it similarly in the auditory canal. Where you have the cochlear implants, right?
So cochlear implants are a reality at the moment.
Okay.
Whereas retinal implants are still theoretical.
Okay.
There is no real prototype of a retinal implant that's really working well enough. Leading research institutes in the world like Moorfields Eye Center and various others have been trying to develop a kind of a retinal implant for many, many years. But there is still nothing really proven or nothing really exciting that we can talk about at this point of time.
Understood.
However, with the amount of research that's going on, I'm sure a prototype of a real functional retinal implant should be available in the next decade or so.
Okay.
So from what I understand, from the little that I know on retinal implants, it's probably like a bypass system.
Yeah.
So this system it's going to be some kind of a device that's probably going to be embedded with artificial intelligence or whatever. that will bypass the actual eye and will actually do what the human eye does. It will kind of replicate what the human eye does. So see, if you basically understand how the eye works, it's not the eye that's seeing, right? As a student of neurosciences, you understand. Mm-hmm. The eye doesn't see, the brain sees. And yeah. The eye is only a means for the brain to see. So the eye takes in light from the outside world and transmits that light through very complex electrical, mechanical, and chemical processes to the brain, to various regions in the brain, and complex visual processing takes place to form images, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the eye is not functioning, say because of any problem, let's say a retinal disease or glaucoma or whatever, I suppose a retinal implant will aim to kind of bypass the eye, take the light from the outside world and send the light directly into the optic nerve for processing in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, let's understand one thing here. This is possible so long as the blindness is ocular blindness. That means the blindness is restricted to the eye. But if the blindness is restricted to the central nervous system, so there's damage to the optic nerve or damage to any parts of the brain that are responsible for visual processing, mm-hmm. then a retinal implant may not really work.
Understood. Got it. Thank you so much, doctor. I have a few more questions and then we can wrap it up. I just wanted to ask, doctor, I ask every other surgeon I've interviewed so far, and the question is, what has been your most interesting case as a medical practitioner?
Oh, that's nice. We see interesting cases all the time, Tanishka, all the time. And it's everything is perspective out here. Well, let me think. So. As recently as just as yesterday, we had a very challenging surgery. Okay. So we encountered something known as IFIS, that's intraoperative floppy iris syndrome.
Okay.
So this is one of the few devastating complications that can be seen in cataract surgery. Mm-hmm. So what happens is patients who are on a certain type of drug known as tamsulosin, which is given typically for prostate problems in elderly male patients. Okay. So this drug causes certain irreversible changes inside the eye, which can pose a real challenge during cataract surgery. So we had this gentleman who we were operating yesterday, and the first eye was uneventful and went very well. And we did not really expect any kind of challenges. We did know that this patient was on tamsulosin for the last couple of years, so we were ready. But I probably saw what was one of my worst cases of IFIS in my entire career. So a surgery that normally would take maybe 15 minutes or so took us almost 2 hours. And it was extremely challenging to overcome the difficulties. But fortunately, in the end, everything went well for the person and he's doing well today.
I'm glad. My final question, doctor, do you have any words of wisdom for listeners who also aspire to pursue a career in the medical field?
Yes. The only one thing I would say is, this field is not for glamour. I've spoken to a lot of people, a lot of my children of my friends who think that getting into medicine is glamorous, and it's very glamorous to have the doctor tag attached to your name. My advice is, there's nothing glamorous about this profession. It is very, 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 it's a profession you need to love. You need to be dedicated. There is tremendous hard work. And a lot of sacrifices. So anybody who's considering pursuing medicine as a career, my advice would be, you have to be sure that you are completely dedicated to this career.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, doctor. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I understand that your schedule is really busy. This has been a very enlightening session. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Tanishka. And I think this is a fantastic initiative you've taken. And mm-hmm. I wish you the very, very best. I understand you also want to pursue medicine as a career.
Yes, yes.
And I think we will be proud to have you as a doctor in the future.
I hope
so. Wish you the very, very best.
Thank you, doctor.